Welcome back to another episode of the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we're going to talk about YouTube. And we're going to talk about YouTube in the context of creating great titles and great thumbnails in order to get someone to actually click on the video. And this is a skill that I've been still trying to improve. And it's one of those things that it just takes practice in order to get something good. And we're going to talk about some of the best practices today.
So when I was at FinCon a couple weeks ago, or last month, that was like over a month ago now. Time is flying.
Has it been a month?
It's been over a month, yeah. So anyway, one of the things that I took away from I went to all the YouTube sessions, as we've talked about. And one of the things that I don't know if surprise isn't the right word, but every person that I went to their talk, they emphasized how much time they spend on title and thumbnails. In fact, the last talk I went to, he said 70% of his content creation time was dedicated to the thumbnail and the title.
So here's a mistake that I found out that I was doing just kind of unintentionally that a colleague just kind of informed me about. I was using the same words in my thumbnail as in the title.
Mm-hmm.
So this past week, I tried an experiment. And one thing I just want to emphasize is that for some reason for my channel, and I think this is the case for a lot of channels, negative stuff seems to do better.
I mean, isn't that the rule overall, unfortunately, with titles?
I think it is, but it always bothers me. Right?
Yeah, because we're not negative people. Yeah.
I'm trying to teach something, but then like the only way I can get them to watch a video is to say something bad. So this last video, I tried something different. So the title was "The Ugly Truth About Selling Online That No Guru Will Tell You About."
Mm-hmm.
And usually in the thumbnail, I'd put like "The Ugly Truth" or something like that. But this time I just wrote, "This is bad."
Mm-hmm.
And then, facial expression. And that's my best performing video for the last 10. And I didn't think the content was anything better than I've been putting out. But I think the fact that the thumbnail actually, people are like, hey, what's bad about this? Or
yeah. Well, it's like that, the example that they used in one of the sessions, it was 9 things people do when they're broke. You know, like a very negative connotation. And what the point that the speaker made, which I thought was really interesting, was it doesn't just appeal to broke people. Because obviously, if you don't have a lot of money, you're going to click on that. Like, am I doing these things? Like, is this going to confirm my brokenness? All this stuff. He said, wealthy people will click on it because they want to make sure they're not doing those things. Because they don't want to be broke, right? So that title, even though to me it's like, oh yeah, like it's for broke people, but wealthy people will click on it as well because they want to make sure that they don't fit in any of those buckets. Because everybody, at the end of the day, I think everybody's a little scared of losing things in general, right? Whether it's losing money, losing people you care about, losing something in your business, and so that fear resonates with people. Like, unfortunately, in a bad way, but it works.
It does. And I think one of the skills that I'm in trying to improve all the time is creating titles that appeal to a broader audience.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, if I wrote something like "How to Increase the Conversion Rate of Your E-commerce Store by Using a Better Value Proposition," no one's going to click on that, right?
Right.
Whereas if I renamed it "How to Just Make More Money,"
yeah,
you know, selling, that would appeal. I think we just had a student that we were just talking about in one of the office hours, and he tried to target a keyword about cloud storage.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And SEO is perfectly acceptable in YouTube land because people do search for these things. And I'm sure cloud storage gets a lot of search volume, but that's not the type of video that a typical person would click on.
Yeah, and we had a whole conversation about it with him during our Q&A. And, you know, this is where I think people get caught up, is that you live in the world of e-commerce. So
right,
the terms that you use, the things that you say, seem very familiar, but to someone who is entering the world of e-commerce or entering the world of digital marketing, a lot of the terms that we talk about, one of the things that we used to get all the time, remember this? We used to say the word link juice when it came to SEO.
Yes.
And every time we would say that in a webinar, it would never fail. Five people. What is link juice? Describe link juice. And you know,
where can I get some? Where can I get some?
How do I buy some of that? Is that mail order? Is that subscribe and save? And so I think for a lot of people, when you are making content, whether it's video, podcast, written content, you use terms that are very familiar to you, but to a broader audience can be very confusing. And so with the cloud storage example, we were trying to emphasize that probably the people that need cloud storage don't even know that that's what it's called, right? If you know what cloud storage is, you probably already are doing it. Right? It's already set up. You've got a process. But if you're, you know, losing, you can't download anything else on your phone's full, you don't want to pay to upgrade, you want to buy the less, you know, cheaper model that has less memory, whatever. You don't know why. You just know that you're unhappy with your current situation. And so we talked with the grumpy sysadmin, Kevin, in our class.
Subscribe to his channel.
Subscribe on YouTube. You know, we were talking to him about like, how can you rephrase this in a way that appeals to people who need cloud storage, but don't even know what it is.
Right. And what we came up with was what to do if you run out of memory on your phone.
Yes. Or something. Everyone knows what that means. Yeah. That we had some better titles, but that was we've reframed the story. And, I think that's what, because like if I ran out of storage on my phone, I wouldn't be searching for cloud storage. I would be searching for why can't I download anything on my phone, right? Or something like that.
Or maybe it'd be like five free ways to get more storage for your phone or something like that. Or
yeah.
I have this problem all the time with my stuff because, you know, I talk about the depths of e-commerce. You know, it doesn't even work that well for me to just even use the word e-commerce in my videos.
Yeah.
It's better to use like side hustle or make money on the side or some spending cash. Yeah. Anytime I use the word business, it also seems to be intimidating.
So this reminds me of, we were at the Alibaba event a few months ago, and there was a talk, I think it was right after your panel or right before, it was right around when you were there, because I was sitting in the auditorium and this guy was talking about his business was taking people to Asia, I think for the Canton Fair.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, you know, just overall the different traveling and the things you need to know. And I feel like I'm pretty well versed in e-commerce. Like I know the terminology. I understood about half of what he was saying. He spoke in so many acronyms that I was like lost halfway through his talk. And I think that's what happens when you are so familiar with the topic, is that when you're thinking about titles for thumbnails, you think about terms that you're familiar with rather than taking yourself out of, you know, your own expertise and going, okay, who am I trying to help and what is their problem and how do I talk to it that way, as opposed to talking to saying the word e-commerce, which even that people don't. Because how many people have you told you're in e-commerce and they're like, what's that?
Well, I actually, everybody? I mean, that's rare. That's rare. But
I still get that all the time.
Do you really? People don't know what e-commerce is?
When I talk about Seller Summit and I'm like, oh, it's a conference for e-commerce sellers. So like, oh, what are e-commerce sellers? And then they think like, oh, is that someone who sells on Etsy?
Oh, I mean, technically that qualifies.
Yes. I'm like, yeah, for sure. Like if you sell on Etsy, you're welcome. I mean, you probably benefit a lot from coming to Seller Summit, but like, I still don't think that most people realize that there's dudes sitting in their living room doing $10 million a year on Amazon, right? Like that's just, people don't have that frame of reference.
No, I totally agree. So I mean, my formula, and I'm constantly experimenting with things. So my formula now is dumbing it down for the common person, mm-hmm. using negativity and curiosity. And that's why it takes me forever. Like I have to be negative and instill curiosity. Yeah.
It's just that it's so not you, which is what's funny about it.
Oh, and here's the other thing. I've experimented with me smiling, me doing like a weird face, or me being like sad, and always the non-smiley faces work better.
Yeah, for sure. I see that. Well, yeah. I don't necessarily think your face, but in general, I've seen that for thumbnails. It's just not in
intuitive.
No.
Yeah.
I've been experimenting with that with the Amazon influencer videos with the thumbnails. I've been trying to pick like the worst frame of the video, like where, because one of the things that I do think is a little bit different between like YouTube and the Amazon reviews is I like the product to be in the thumbnail. You know, like you can't just do a bunch of stock photos because people are wanting to learn about the product. So the best awkward shot I can get with the product in it seems to do way better than when initially I was like smiling and holding it up, you know, looking like a Vanna White. I mean, not, I don't look like Vanna White, but you know, I was trying to get that spokesperson look, and those are not interesting to people. They want to see like the one that's doing the best for me. I'm holding up a plastic container full of flour, like shaking it, and it's not obviously not spilling. So,
do they tell you the click-through rate?
No, but you do know like watch time versus like purchasing. So you can kind of get an idea of like the longer people watch, you know, it's placed. So it's like, you kind of know how much traffic the product gets. So you can kind of do a roundabout way. But yeah, the ones that have the crazy thumbnails perform better.
I'm curious, do you put words on the thumbnails at all or no?
Yes.
And what is it? Do you use negative ones? Like,
so
but you didn't know this, or
I don't use negative because it is. I mean, Amazon has been very clear that like they want people to make an educated product decision from your review, and so I try to put like three qualities of the product in the thumbnail title, right? So waterproof, BPA free, something else. You know, like whatever the portable, easy, you know, stuff like that. Because I do think that that's another thing I've started. But one thing that you were saying that actually got me thinking about this is that on the Amazon influencer, you also get the words on your thumbnail, plus you get a title, right? So you have both that show up, but you were saying you used to make those the same and yes. Now you're making them different.
Right. Only because it's repetitive, right?
Right.
The thumbnail is supposed to grab the attention and then they read the title. Yeah. But if it's redundant, you're like wasting words. It's like using redundant keywords in like an Amazon listing or something like that.
That makes sense. Now, are you using AI at all to like come up with these titles, or have you gone back?
I always do. I always do. I don't take them as is. I usually have it output like 15 or 20 different titles around the topic. Mm-hmm. And then I just mishmash the ones together. But like my go-tos now are like the ugly truth.
Mm-hmm. why is the truth so ugly?
Yeah, why is the truth so ugly? Or forget this. Mm-hmm. Or buyer beware. You know, warnings basically.
Yeah, it's sad that that's what we've become.
And those seem to do the best.
Yeah.
Or things I would never do, or things I would do. Anything to do with side hustles seems to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, what's sad is I feel like I'm pigeonholed in a way, because if I stray from my formula, then I don't get as many views. So I'm incentivized to use these same things.
Yeah. Now, we have a friend, Jake, from Creator Hooks.
Yep.
Who basically, this is all he does. I'm not trying to minimize what he does. He's very, very good at it. But he's the hook guy, right? Like he is
the hook guy.
Comes up with these titles and thumbnail titles. And what is amazing about Jake is that we've done this to him on the spot, where we've given, like, this is a video about XYZ. And he can, off the top of his head, come up with five amazing titles in a minute. Like he's like a human ChatGPT when it comes to this.
He's better than ChatGPT, yeah.
For sure. And we've had him, you know, do office hours, and he's actually speaking at next year's Seller Summit. He spoke at Seller Summit a couple years ago. So what are some things that Jake says to like help people? Because I know not everybody knows him or has heard him speak before.
Yeah, I mean, he's talked about the different things with titles. Negativity was one thing. Curiosity and desire. I think those are the most desirable traits to have in a title and a thumbnail. So if you guys haven't done this yet, I would subscribe to the Creator Hooks newsletter. What he does is every single week, I think he looks at like the top performing videos on YouTube, and he just breaks down why the titles work. And then he also picks some ones that sounded good but were duds and explains why they were duds. And just to be clear, you know, there's some channels out there that can just not even have a title and still do well. So what he does is he purposely finds videos that are outperforming their typical views.
Okay.
For his examples. So it has to do with the title and the thumbnail as opposed to the fact that this guy's popular.
I'm curious, is outperforming their typical views of other videos that person has or other videos
that person has? So for example, you know, if Mr. Beast, he could put the title going, hello, and it would still get a million views, right?
Yeah, for sure.
But let's say his typical videos get like 10 million views. Well, that means that one underperformed from his perspective.
Yeah.
Right.
I saw a video with him the other day, side note, where he's like living in a coffin for 7 days. Have you seen this?
Oh, yeah. That's an old one, isn't it?
Is it? I am not up on Mr. Beast. I mean, like, I know who he is, but I'm not. I feel like he could put up absolutely anything and it would get 10 million views. But
I mean, he goes for like the outrageous stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So if someone has a YouTube channel, and like, actually, this is what got us to the point with Kevin, is that he was saying that he put up this video on cloud storage that he was very excited about. And it basically, actually, I think he said to us, I've had my first dud.
Yes, that's correct.
His normal videos get several hundred to thousands of views. Like, he's definitely has a range of views that his videos get. And this one, after like 24 hours, I think he said had 20 views or something like that. It was very, very low.
Yeah.
So if that happens, should you just take it down and try again? Like, what's the, I know it's, there's like a whole, I feel like you don't want to upset the apple cart, but what do you do?
I do, and I don't know if this is the correct way to do it, but I've had results this way. Usually within an hour and a half, I look at it, and if it's grossly underperforming, like in this case with Kevin's, it was obvious, I switch up the thumbnail first. Usually I have three thumbnails in reserve.
Okay.
So like if that one doesn't work, I switch it out. And sometimes that can right the ship and turn things completely around.
So you're using the same title.
I don't touch the words because if you mess with the title, I think Google like re-algorithmizes the video.
Yeah.
And so whenever I change the title, like usually the video is done.
Yeah.
Like I don't think I've ever changed the title like in the early going and had it come back. Whereas with the thumbnail I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's step two? That doesn't work.
If that doesn't work, I switch out the thumbnail again and see if I can get it. But sometimes at that point, it's just a dead duck. If it's that low, like Kevin's case, I think it was way lower than his typical. Yeah. I'd probably just take it down, adjust the video a little bit. Maybe like the re-record like the first 30 seconds or so. Mm-hmm. To create a different hook like the one we talked about.
Yeah.
Give it a new title, new thumbnail, and re-upload it.
Okay. So can we just talk about that a little bit? That sounds very intimidating to me.
Does it?
So you're going to... Yes. So
why?
Maybe it's because you film all your videos in the same shirt. But like...
Well, no. So, it's just... You're just re-recording like the beginning part. Right.
Yeah. But like, let's just say like your videos, Kevin's videos are good examples of this. You're sitting in front of the camera talking. So is Kevin. And then you have like slides that come in, B-roll. But like in general, there's a theme with you talking to the camera. So are you going to go pull that shirt out of the dirty clothes and like put it back on?
I would
on?
Wash it. Okay. So here's something I recently had to do.
You know what I'm saying though? That like seems very overwhelming to like, I have to, well, obviously you don't have to do your hair the same way, but like, are you trying to make it look like the video is consistent or do you don't care if like, you know, well, today
no,
I'm
I try to make it look
shirt.
Consistent.
Okay. But, so you're trying to recreate it.
So this is what, okay. So I actually just had to do this. So okay. I did a video for a client and, it required two refilms. So I knew going into this, and usually I don't do sponsored videos, but this one I did because I like the company.
Yeah.
So I purposely wore a black V-neck, and I know I have three of those. And I figured I wouldn't have to refilm more than three times. So, yeah.
So I have your – that's funny that you say that, and that's kind of why I wanted to dig on this a little bit, is that I have started to wear like the same two shirts in all my Amazon videos. Because for that very reason, if I realized, like one of the times I made a video and I realized I'd forgot to film anything about like a very important component of the product, Like I had to go back and refilm, but I didn't realize, sometimes you don't realize it until you're either editing it yourself or you get the edit back and you're like, I totally forgot to say this, right? I think one of mine was the treadmill. And one of the features of this under the desk treadmill that I have that I think is a very good selling point is that it's really easy to pick up and move. So like most treadmills are super clunky. They're heavy. It takes two people to move them. This, I can literally move all over my house. I could probably carry it up my stairs if I needed to. It's very lightweight and it has wheels. And so you kind of like, you know, with like one motion, you could wheel it under a couch. You know, it's like pretty nice to have. And I didn't mention that at all in the video. And I was like, as I was watching, because I edited this, as I'm watching it, I'm like, this is one of the biggest selling points of this treadmill and is mentioned all throughout the listing. Right. So clearly that's there, you know, so to show me moving the treadmill was actually a good, like a very important feature to like show off in this video. So I had to refilm it. And when I had to go find those clothes again, you know, it was a huge pain in the butt. So now I'm like, I have two outfits. I have like the workout outfit and the non-work. Like I literally, and it's like basically all black, right? Cause I'm like, cause like if that tank top's almost the same as this tank top, probably not noticeable. Right. Like,
I wouldn't be able to notice.
But like you also, I don't want to come on one day in like workout clothes and the next day I'm in like a nice outfit and film the same, you know, part of the video. But I've done the same thing now. I'm like, no, I have two outfits that I film in and that's it. Because if I have to redo it, I want to be able to like grab that as quick as possible.
Yeah. I mean, you also have the problem of your hair, right? But I don't know.
That For is me, a huge problem, right? Because, you know, my hair looks different every single day.
Yeah.
It's why they make people wear wigs on movie sets.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so everything stays really consistent.
I mean, my hair looks the same every day.
Yes, so. Your hair has looked the same since 2014,
yes,
since I've met you. I've had multiple colors, multiple lengths, multiple styles. You know, there's probably a bangs phase in there. I don't know. So that's interesting because I do feel like when we talk about, we were joking about some of this, but the thought of refilming part of a video to me is like, no.
Really? For me, it's not a big deal. Like I just flip on the camera and I'm indoors, right? So the lighting is controlled.
Yeah.
So I just turn on the lights and then sit down and just re-record like, you know, however many, it's usually like 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And I just throw it overboard and splice it in.
No, I get what you're saying, but I think like we literally just recorded a How to Get Over Your Fear of Video podcast.
Right.
And,
yes.
And now we're like, oh, just kidding. You get to refilm.
I mean, here's what if the video is a dud,
yeah,
and I spent a lot of time scripting, filming and editing that video, I wanted to do reasonably well, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be number one. Mm-hmm. I usually just try to go for the top five of the videos that I've done, you know, for the past 10, because YouTube gives you those stats. But if it's like a 10 out of 10, sometimes I'll keep it, even if it's a 10 out of 10. If it's a good video and I feel like I did my best with the title and the thumbnail, it's just not a topic that gets a lot of search volume.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'll put those in. But if it's grossly underperforming, like in Kevin's case, it was 20 versus like 1,000.
Yeah.
That I would definitely take down and rejigger it.
Well, and I think in his case, it seemed obvious to the rest of us, right? Like the people that were on the Q&A that day in the course, that cloud storage just wasn't the right terminology. You know, so that was like, to me, like a glaring, like, oh, this is probably an easy fix for you. But you've talked about, you know, changing the thumbnail, refilming the hook. Is there anything else you would try before giving up?
Well, I mean, it's mainly the thumbnail. I mean, you can try changing the title and like waiting a week, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I've ever turned it around by changing the title before.
Interesting.
Because it kills the initial momentum.
Mm-hmm.
Like usually you get a lot of views in that first day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you change the title, it's almost like losing that first day's worth of momentum.
Yeah.
I'm sure it could come back later on. Like I've had videos that just take off like 4 to 6 months later. I mean, that happens on occasion, but yeah, if it's grossly underperforming, like 10x lower,
yeah,
I usually take it down. And that's only happened, to be clear, that's only happened maybe like twice.
Yeah. So for people that aren't Jake and can just, you know, whip up amazing titles, you know. I'm wondering if there's, is it worth it, or if it, there's something out there where there's like a bank of catchy, it's like, do you remember when you were a kid and you had to do like these, probably not because you went to better schools, but like they gave you like sentence starters and story starters where they're like on a dark wintry night, you know, they gave you like the first two sentences and you had to finish the story. And like, I obviously like to write, but I know that for a lot of people, those story starters, they, if you just said, here's a piece of paper, write a story, half the class wouldn't have been able to do it. But if you said, here's the first two sentences, finish the story, it becomes way easier for people that even aren't, you know, the best writers or the most proficient at this. So is there like a hack for people to sort of get a story starter? You would just completely ChatGPT it. Not completely,
I always,
but like, that's your story starter.
That's my go-to.
Yeah.
That's my go-to. And then Jake's newsletter, I go for ideas. But
yeah,
the problem with the newsletter is that, you know, he's looking at YouTube videos across a whole bunch of different genres, right?
Right.
And to match one of his with e-commerce or business is sometimes kind of tough.
Yeah.
But it works. So I was just looking at this one I was trying to work in the other day. You know, I spent a year searching for the weirdest whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just those are ones that instill curiosity. And some of these, like whenever I see like one that can be applied to mine, I put it in my own little storage bank, which is essentially just a Google sheet.
Yeah.
And then I try to reframe it in that. But for the most part, I just use ChatGPT. I literally just say, give me like 10 clickbait titles for this topic. And then I mix and match the ones I would like. And ChatGPT is essentially that bank.
Yeah. Do you keep a spreadsheet of like things that you don't use, but you want to hold on to?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I do that based on Jake's newsletter, actually.
Okay. So yeah. So you have a spreadsheet and then you go into ChatGPT, and then now do you also keep track of the bombs?
I do not. I try to channel those out of my mind, actually. I don't pay attention to the bombs. I will tell you my worst performing video in recent memory was the one where I talked about how to write a traditionally published book.
People are like, that's too hard. We're not.
People do not want to do that on my channel.
No,
but they're not interested in it at all.
I don't. So I think your channel, not to tangent totally on this, but I think your channel, it's not people that want to get rich quick, but it's people that want to get rich quicker. Or, you know, not the quickest. Like people are not watching your channel to find out how to make money in 10 years. You know what
well,
I
no,
mean?
It's not that. People just, they're not even interested in e-commerce per se.
Really?
Is what I found out. They just want to know how to make money.
Yeah.
Right? So anything I do that's, and occasionally I'll do this just so I don't go crazy. Like I feel like I'm teaching someone something. Yeah. I'll go into a little bit more depth on e-com.
Mm-hmm.
And those never do well. But even if I, even if I put together a really good thumbnail,
yeah,
like, you know, this made me X number of dollars.
Yeah.
They start watching the video and they're like, I know it's crickets because no one's even commenting on it.
Yeah. You've made it too hard.
It just does. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it looks like work.
Yeah.
Like you got to do something in order to get results.
Well, yeah. And I think the problem with the book video is that you don't write a book to get rich. You write a book because you are rich. Like,
I don't think that's true at all.
I do. Like,
do you think everyone who's written a book is wealthy?
I don't think everybody who writes a book is wealthy. And I think there are, like, I think about Elizabeth Gilbert a lot, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love and several other books. I really enjoy her stuff. And she's written like fiction and then nonfiction. There are people, or like J.K. Rowling, right? The Harry Potter author. Like they were not rich when they started, right? But they happened to write amazing, you know, pieces of work, and they became rich and famous from their writing. But most of the people that write books that you and I read write books because they're already really, really good at what they're doing.
It's because they're in the business space, right?
But even like I read a lot of self-help books that aren't necessarily business related, they're personal, but it's because they're like the top therapist in their field, or they've developed some sort of non-traditional mechanisms to help people. You know, it's like they're writing a book because they've already had a lot of success. It's not like, well, I have this new way to cure people's depression and I'm going to write a book about it and see what happens. It's like, no, they've already cured 10,000 people and now they're writing a book to share their results.
You know, what's funny about that is I did a joint webinar with Chandler Bolt, who runs a self-publishing school. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised by the amount of interest that people had in self-publishing their own book.
Yeah, because they want to just put it on Kindle, right? I mean, they want to just put it out there.
Yeah, I guess maybe where the video went wrong was I used traditionally published book as opposed to self-published context of making money.
I mean, I've made thousands and thousands of dollars from Kindle books. We know people who've made hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, I haven't added up my Kindle earnings over the past 15 years, but it's significant. We know people who've made hundreds of thousands of dollars from Kindle books. There's people out there that write purely just fiction for Kindle and are like, they have 150 books. Like, actually, some bloggers I know have moved to Kindle fiction publishing and are highly successful, right? They started out as like mom bloggers. So I think everyone knows that this is like a lucrative space if you're a decent, you know, if you can do a good job writing. I don't think anybody can just go out there and put up crap. I do think you have to put up, to make this successful, you have to be a good writer or have a really good editor. But yeah, I think when you think traditionally published, it's like, well, I have to get in front of a publisher. I have to have an audience to pitch to the publisher. Publishers want you to bring as much to the table as they bring.
More, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I would have felt disingenuous if I would have said something like, how to make money writing a traditionally published book, because I haven't made any yet.
How to spend a year of your life not making any
money. 3 years of your life.
The ultimate side hustle.
You know, it's funny. I just had Noah Kagan on the podcast. He has a book coming out in January. And one of the questions I asked him was, why did you decide to go traditionally published instead of self-published?
Yeah.
And he had a great answer for that. He said, have you ever heard of a book that was self-published that was nationally acclaimed and well-known? Like, what well-known book do you know that was self-published?
I don't know.
That's what I said too. I couldn't think. Yeah. The only one I could think of was Brandon Turner's book.
Yes.
Real Estate Investing.
Yeah.
That one outsells, you know, books on the bestseller list. Yeah. By the way, did I tell you they took away the Wall Street Journal bestseller list?
Yes, you did. Yeah. Well, we talked about it on, I think, Friday check-in.
Oh, did we? Okay, yeah.
Yes, yes.
So I got in, just, got in, the
just in time. Just in the nick of time.
Yeah. Sorry, that was an aside. What was the point of that story?
So Noah was saying that I agree. Traditionally published books are street cred. Right. But your audience wants to make money. They don't give a rip about street cred.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if you want to make money, put some crap up on Kindle. Like,
you know how I know that's true about my audience is because I once did a video where I just talked about random ways to make money.
Yes. I heard that video.
And that one did really well. And it wasn't anything that I thought could be like a long-term business. It was literally just how to make some spending cash that won't lead to a long-term thing, but you'll make money now.
So I think, let's just go back to your video that crashed and burned. What I would have changed the title to something like, why I'll never traditionally publish a book again when I can get rich on Kindle or something like that. And I would have added like some content in that video about certain people that are like the best-selling Kindle authors. You know,
that would have been great.
I would have flipped. So then you could still talk about writing a traditionally published book, because I do think there are people out there that like Noah, like, I want to do this because I want the cred, which is totally fine. I do think like a perfect example of someone who's made a lot of money off her books and has leveraged it is Erin Chase with $5 Dinners. You know, she started her blog in 2009 and had a book deal by the beginning of 2010 because it was like during the recession. Her blog took off because groceries, it's like now groceries are crazy expensive. You know, and people were like trying to find ways to save money, especially on food. And she wrote three cookbooks, I think, in total, all traditionally published. And that first cookbook got her on Rachel Ray, the Today Show. Like it, and then those, every time she made a media appearance, her site traffic would blow up, right? So she would get more subscribers, more site traffic. She turned that into a suite of digital products, right? Where she's making all the money, right? So she did make money from her cookbook, but the cookbook got her the media, which then leveraged her digital products, which are the cash cows, right? Because there's no overhead. You're not paying a publisher. You're not getting the whatever small percentage is. And so she was able to turn a traditional publishing into a very lucrative business. But most people don't have the ability to do that, right? Or they don't want to go on the speaking circuit. Like, you have no desire to like travel 40 weeks out of the year and speak.
No.
That I know of. Yeah.
No, not at all. No desire to travel, period.
But someone like your friend John Acuff, right, who has written multiple traditionally published books. I mean, he's a professional speaker. That's what he does.
He is. He is. And so is our good friend Grant Baldwin. He's a professional speaker.
Yeah. So like, John's leveraged his books. You know, he puts out a book and then he does the speaking circuit basically in relation to whatever the topic is he's writing about. So, you know, I think, but anyway, all that to say that I think you could have like reframed that title to probably get a better result on YouTube, but it would have had to like stray from what you actually wanted to talk about, which was basically the process of getting a book published.
Yeah. I would have had to rejigger the entire content of that video.
And you didn't have that shirt anymore, so you couldn't do it.
Actually, also, I didn't want to say any negative things about publishing a traditionally published book.
Yeah.
Just in case, in the remote chance that I want to do another one, I don't want to be like seen saying, oh, I would never do that again.
Yeah.
I still do have mixed feelings about it. And I'm curious. I'm going to talk to Noah, because Noah has published 3 self-published books that have done really well.
Yeah.
So that's why I kind of asked him why he decided to go traditionally. So we'll see what I'm curious to see what he says after his experience.
I was just going to say, what are you titling that video? But it's not, it's a podcast.
Which one? Oh, the podcast. Noah. Oh yeah. I don't even know what. So his book title is, The Millionaire Weekend. I think that's what it's called.
Oh yes. I think that's what you told me.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. But we've actually just strayed from the topic of this video too, of this podcast. But you know, I like your idea actually, because that incorporates negativity.
Yeah.
And then a reversal.
Yeah, and curiosity too. I think.
And curiosity.
To some extent.
Yeah.
Or that's actually the other angle that you could have taken with the traditional publishing is like, how hard is it, or was it worth it? Like. And obviously you're in like a weird spot where you like, you do have, like, you can't go on, not that you would, but you can't go on there and like dog traditional publishing when you have a contract with a traditional publisher. And you wouldn't anyway, but you could use some of that curiosity of like, how many hours did it take me to write a book? You know, I think you probably could have reframed it a little bit.
I spent the last 3 years of my life writing this book.
Yeah. What did I learn?
Was it worth it?
The ugly truth.
Yeah, the ugly truth. Yes. I should use the ugly truth. My go-to.
That's right. It could have been a picture of you like sweating with a pencil and a stack of paper. But I think that this is, although off topic a little bit, a good way to like wrap it up, in that I think with anything, there is probably some angle that you can take with a title and a thumbnail that fulfills that curiosity, that slight negative angle, the fear. I like to think of it more as fear. Not that that's any better. It just makes me feel better to say it that way. For people where you can still talk, because I feel like one of the things that I don't want people to get confused about is your channel needs to be you. It needs to be authentic. It needs to be the things you want to talk about. You shouldn't just be creating videos that people will click on, right? You need to figure out a way to talk about what you want to talk about and entice people to want to listen to you.
I mean, there's always an angle.
Yeah.
But actually, regarding what you just said, I think that's a topic for another podcast, because there are just certain topics, and I'm almost positive that YouTube just parses the transcript of everything you're saying and takes that content and decides how much of an audience should get to watch it.
Yeah.
There are just some topics that aren't going to be popular, and you have to just weigh to yourself, hey, do I bow down to the algorithm? Or do I create content that I want that isn't going to get as many eyeballs? It's a dilemma. Because I know what does well.
Yeah.
Like, if I wanted to blow up my channel, I would only talk about side hustles.
Yeah.
Like at a very surface level too at that.
Yeah.
Because that's what people want. No one likes the in-depth stuff that looks like work.
No, people do, but the percentage of people that like the in-depth stuff is significantly smaller, so the opportunity is smaller.
Yes. Plus, it bothers me to no end. Like when I put out one of those videos, I like die a little bit inside. But
it's like whenever I met you, this is like we'll do full circle. Whenever I met you, you refused to write what we like to call fluff pieces.
Yes.
And we would talk about this. This was actually, we talked about this a lot. And every once in, and then you wrote one about something. You had like a, you know, come to Jesus sort of moment. You wrote a fluff piece and it like wildly outperformed your other videos as, or other pieces of content, as not in search, but in like, you know, people reading, emailing you about it, subscribing, all this stuff, right? And so I remember like back in the day, I would get a message from you and you're like, fluff piece goes live tomorrow. And you would be all depressed because like the 5,000 word technical article about how you taught somebody how to like, you know, actually do something that would help their business would, it would never bomb. You would get search and, you know, it would eventually pick up, but it was those fluff pieces that people absolutely loved and it irritated you to no end.
It still does. And in fact, YouTube is like Fluff Piece City. It literally is. Yeah. Anyway, these are just some moral dilemmas that I have every time I put out a piece of content.
I think it's everybody's moral dilemma on, you know, unless, I mean, you don't think Mr. Beast has these same moral dilemmas? Like he probably doesn't want to live in a coffin for 12 days or 7 days, but he's doing it because he knows it's going to
go crazy. No, I think he just does stuff that he enjoys at this point or thinks will be interesting.
I don't know. I think every creator falls into the, you know what performs and you know what you like. And sometimes they don't always line up.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.